Welcome to episode 9 of the R Squared podcast. I'm your host, Ian Levy. Today's guest is John Schumann, stats analyst for NBA.com and general all-around gentleman. Hey, John, how you doing today?
I'm great, Ian. How you doing, man?
Great. Thanks for coming on. You are the basketball analytics guy at NBA.com. That's sort of, I don't know if that's an official title or an unofficial title, but we wanted to have you on and talk a little bit about this first season with SportView data and some of your writing technique stuff. But I think for most people, a place to begin would just be how you got started and sort of your background with analytics and what you brought to that when you started with the NBA.
Wow, when I started the NBA, I had no background with analytics, really. I just came on as a writer and a producer. When I started in 2005, we were in Secaucus and we were run by the NBA. In 2008, we moved to, Turner took over. But in 2005... of the sort of editorial desk, there was only just a few of us, and basically we were not only writing our stuff but also producing our own stuff. So basically I came in with a knowledge of HTML and some scripting a little bit, so that sort of helped me get the job in the first place. And so I had no idea what I was doing as far as analytics. I forget what year it was, but at one point I just happened to be like looking at assist ratio, and I wanted to see if what assist ratio had to do with, whether teams that had high assist ratios were good offensive teams. And basically I didn't even do like a correlation. I basically just did, the top 10 in assist ratios ranked whatever in points per game, even. Like, I didn't even look at efficiency. Like, I wrote this an article that was just so... if I looked at it now, I'd cry. And basically, after I wrote that, I just got a bunch of emails from people who said, "Oh, you should look at efficiency, and you should do this, and you should do that." And I started doing that. And I think shortly thereafter, I picked up basketball on paper and really figured out, oh my gosh, what was going on. I am sort of mathematically inclined, so I think I picked it up pretty quickly, and once I learned about efficiency, I sort of forgot about points per game forever, and I guess it goes on from there, how it all sort of developed. And I've been lucky enough to have access to some tools that other people don't necessarily have, so that helps a lot. But I'm just naturally curious about what happens on the court shows up in the numbers, and how the numbers reflect what happens on the court. So I think but it all started with some article. I hope it's not on the site anymore, because it's really awful what I was doing. But it was just it came out of just curiosity. It's really like, and basically I figured out eventually that no, there wasn't really a correlation between assist ratio and offense. You could have a great offense that moves the ball, or that assists on a high percentage of shots, and you can have a great offense that doesn't. Back then, I think the Mavs were the example of a team that had a low assist ratio but also a pretty good offense anyway.
Huh. So, I know clearly now, with the content you guys do at the NBA, there's some intentionality about working in stats and specific kinds of stats. But for most of this sort of growth over the past couple of years, you would say that your incorporating analytics has been mostly sort of to satisfy your own curiosity. And when was the when, if ever, was the point where where the NBA or Turner was sort of saying, "All right, we want analytics as part of what we're doing, and we want you to, we want you to have certain things in there."
That's a good question. I mean, I always, Yeah, I was just was a general writer, but always fell back on numbers as a way for me to explain things or for me to analyze things, basically. I always thought of myself as an analyst more than anything,
mm-hmm.
More than a reporter. And then, you know, after Turner took over at some point, you know, my bosses realized that this was a niche and that I had a handle on things and that, you know, they could use me for that, and I was happy to do it. So, I couldn't even tell you what year it was, but at some point in the last 5 years, it sort of just came, okay, you're the numbers guy, and I was cool with that. In fact, it may even go back before that, where I did sort of a numbers thing, maybe on a weekly basis or a monthly basis or something, while we were still with the NBA, but I couldn't even remember. Like I said, I have no intention to dive into my archives from back in those days, because I wouldn't be happy with what I was reading.
Yeah, I don't think any of us would like to go back 4, 5, 6, 7 years and see what we were working on. So, you know, you I think you were sort of one of the bigger names to be incorporating this stuff on a regular basis, you know, at a big media outlet. And so I think that probably naturally sort of put you sort of ahead of the curve compared to your audience, to your readers. Have you felt that over time? Did you get pushback from people at different points about, you know, that this was either not interesting or not correct or didn't accurately represent what was going on? And do you feel like the average fan or the average reader has sort of caught up to you to some degree?
Oh, I think so. Definitely. I think it's definitely more accepted every year. I don't think I've gotten much pushback. I think there is a group of people that sort of eat this kind of stuff up, and they love it, and they look forward to it all the time. And I don't think I've had to I don't worry about the other group. I realize I have to, you know, when I'm writing, that I have to sort of explain stuff along the way. And I, you know, whenever I do a table or something with efficiency, I always try to explain what pace is and what offensive rating is, and make sure that I'm not, you know, talking above the general NBA audience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always a challenge. Is I think the biggest challenge with writing stats is writing stats and making it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
To more than just stats people. So you have to, you know, try to weave it into an anecdote or weave an anecdote into the stats thing. And I find it's sometimes best to just break it up as far as being more of a notes thing than a long narrative as far as a particular story that's numbers based.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, I noticed that you, you know, when you go through your archives and you look at the stuff that you did this past year, like, you're one of the people who still consistently has, like, definitions of statistics in your piece. And it's funny because it's something I've talked about with a couple other different people. And on the past couple podcasts, it's come up where, you know, I started writing about basketball like 4 years ago. And when I started doing it, it felt like it was really common practice. Everybody, you know, Henry Abbott, everyone, if you mentioned true shooting percentage or something like that, there was always sort of a, you know, a definition in parentheses, or at the least, you know, is hyperlinked to something. And it seems like that's not common practice anymore, is that in a lot of places and a lot of media outlets, it's just sort of assumed that now everybody knows what true shooting percentage is because it's been out for long enough. But you seem like you definitely fall on the side of you don't want to leave anybody behind. And so anytime you're mentioning those things, it's always, you know, the background is always there for people.
Yeah, I mean, I probably don't explain it as, like, I don't go out to explain why I use effective field goal percentage or true shooting percentage in a particular thing, but I'll give you the formula for it, mm-hmm. basically every time I use it. Sometimes I think of myself writing for my dad, who's a basketball fan, but who doesn't necessarily remember, you know, the definition of true shooting percentage or effective field goal percentage every time he's reading it. In fact, the other day I tweeted something out. It was a table. It was a sport view, some sport view numbers. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the columns or whatever had a it was like PFD for personal fouls drawn, but I didn't put an explanation for that underneath. And my dad sent me an email, what is PFD? And I realized, oh, you know, I should have put that in the image of that I tweeted out, because it's not obvious to, you know, because for me, I'm doing stuff, I'm working and stuff. And so you immediately put PFD and you've been working on that table for hours or whatever. So you know what it is, but then you're going to put it out there and nobody's going to realize what that is. And you know, you gotta, that's like an automatic thing when I do a table in a story to put the definition, or if I reference true shooting percentage in a paragraph, I'll just put a little note underneath it in italics, true shooting percentage equals, you know, 2/whatever points, you know, all that stuff. So
knowing that that's something that's going to be important, like in a piece, whatever the statistics you're using in that piece are, knowing that you're going to have to address them and define them or whatever. So you're certainly thinking about sort of about making sure people can stay with you there. Is there any sort of thought, any sort of broader arc to sort of education with analytics? I mean, do you ever, I don't know, if you ever sort of find yourself feeling like, I want to pull a bigger thread here, I want to pull people along, sort of understanding some of these analytics concepts, not just in this particular piece to understand this, you know, this specific statistic for this specific, you know, story that I'm trying to tell about the Spurs or whatever it is. Do you ever think sort of about that bigger picture about bringing people along with you?
Like a sort of a beginner's guide to it. I think we've talked about that, doing it, especially when we've sort of relaunched the stats site a couple times. It's just sort of having why this stuff matters type of article, and what it's all about, and why you should know what efficiency is, and why you should know what effective field goal percentage is. And I think I've done something like that. I think we did something like that about a year ago. And it was just the basics. I think that's important. I don't know. It's kind of, you have to wonder, if do you do that every year? You know, how often do you do something like that? I think it's important, and we don't have, that's one thing we don't have is on the site, is just here's an explainer, basically. I mean, the good thing about the stats site is great in that if you hover over a column title, it'll tell you what that is, and I think that's cool, and credit goes to the developers for that. So that helps.
So when you are sort of working through an idea or sitting down to figure out what you're going to write, how often would you say you start with an analytic idea, like the thing you were talking about before with assist ratio and points per game? How often does your idea sort of start with the stat, and how often does it start with something that you see on the court that you then go to the statistics to sort of add context to?
That's a good question. I think it's a mix. I think it's just a mix of a few things. One, sometimes it's watching a game, seeing something, and okay, let's look at some numbers to see if the idea pans out. Sometimes it's just going through the numbers. Like I have, with our stats system at the NBA, what used to be called StatsCube, you know, that was an online thing, but it's also an offline tool that I still use and teams still use. I use it every single day. And so I have a bunch of reports that I get from that. I use that tool for. Basically, I have a bunch of reports for every single team. Basically, I'll have like an Excel sheet for every team, which has their game by game numbers, their lineup data, their shooting charts, or their shooting, you know, location data, their player sort of player data, just like a advanced stats for each player. So I have a bunch of that stuff, and then I have league-wide reports, you know, team-by-team efficiency and four factors, stuff like that. And so I'm going through those reports on a daily basis, basically, especially when I'm doing power rankings. I'm going through the team report and just trying to find anything interesting, basically. And so that – and idea might come from that, where I refresh a refresher report and sort through it and find a stat that pops out. Oh, this combination has played really well together. And then that will take me to the film, you know, or whether it's synergy or our video box scores.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes it's, oh, this team is in town this week. You know, I live in New Jersey. I go to games in Brooklyn, in New York, and in Philadelphia. And so, you know, when the Cavs come to town, or, you know, I'll be there, and I might, look at the Cavs numbers, look at their most recent game, look at the numbers, and an idea, you know, I realize, okay, I'm going to go see the Cavs tonight. I need something to talk to them about and something to, a story to write. And so it'll come through there. So there's an idea, and sometimes my editor will send me something. Say, hey, we need something on this. And something, or it's a transaction happens, a trade happens, and you know you gotta come up with an angle or something. You know, you gotta figure out how this player is gonna affect, you know, this team, and sort of you look at, you know, where the team is strong or weak, and where the player is strong or weak, and how he could help or how he might not help, and how he affects his new teammates.
So, I mean, I know you also do some original reporting, and you're often covering specific games and teams and players. Have you found, over the past couple of years that if you are bringing some of those statistics in as prep points for yourself, and you're asking players or coaches or whatever about those statistics, or do you feel like can you sort of see evidence of this analytic culture seeping into the NBA? Are players and coaches sort of more well-versed in those sorts of things and more willing to talk about them?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. And almost all coaches are receptive to it at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I remember sort of, when the Celtics first got good, 2007, 2008, I remember asking Doc Rivers, like, why don't you care about offensive rebounds? You know, like, that was, you know, always, you know, and that was, came from, you know, just looking at their numbers and seeing what they did well and what they didn't do well. And, you know, how do you, commit less turnovers and stuff like that? He'll sort of know that, okay, you were looking at our numbers, you know, more than, you know, the next guy was, or something like that. But I always, try to sort of, not look straight on a numbers basis, but always try to marry it with what's happening on the court and see, why a number is, why they're doing well or poorly in any particular category. I think coaches are definitely more aware of that kind of stuff and more receptive to those kind of questions.
Mm-hmm.
Players, I'm not sure. You might say a player, hey, your offense was really good tonight, or would, you know, they scored, 120 points per 100 possessions in the game and won the game 100. And they say, oh, but our defense is what led to our offense. And you look at the numbers and you go, well, not really. But, okay. And so you just sort of move on, that kind of thing. I think the coaches are definitely, there's still a couple old school coaches out there, and but I think definitely they're more open to that stuff, more receptive to that stuff, and more ready to answer your question when you talk about that stuff.
Do you find that there are places where, with any of those coaches or front office people, where they're sort of guarded? You know, like I know teams are so protective of the data that they're using and the approaches that they're using and the people who are consulting with them and all those sorts of things. And it's funny because also some of the things are like really obvious. You know, like the Rockets shot selection this year, like. That was clearly something that was derived from analytics, but like, you know, there was nothing sort of, there was nothing secret about that. But it also seemed like something that they, you know, maybe didn't want to talk about explicitly.
Yeah, there's some of that. You know, last season I did something on the Spurs defense and how, you know, they had sort of regressed defensively every year for the last several years, and they fell to maybe 11th in the 11-12 season. Mm-hmm. So they were out of the top 10 for two seasons, I think. And then last season, they got back to being a top three defensive team. And there was something at the Sloan Conference 2013 where R.C. Buford, I believe, was on the basketball panel and said something like, hey, we looked at our numbers this summer and realized we needed to change our priorities defensively and stuff. And so I, you know, the next time I saw Popovich, I tried to sort of probe that.
Mm-hmm.
He basically says, yeah, we're defending better. You know, that's, you know, that's basically it. Yeah. You know, what are you doing differently? Yeah, we're just defending better. And even I asked him, basically a similar question at the finals that year and a similar question at the finals this year, and basically it's we're defending better. Buford was a little bit more open when I was able to talk to him about it. Basically said that, you know, we valued defensive rebounding too much and contesting shots not enough, and basically the idea is that, you know, the most important thing you can do defensively is contest shots, and the most important thing you can do offensively is make shots. You know, there's the other four factors also play a role, but effective field goal percentage is obviously the most important by far on either end of the floor.
That's interesting, because you do see that with the Spurs numbers. You know, they don't really stand out on any other on any of the other four factors. You know, it's like all that energy's into making shots and keeping the other people from making them.
Yeah, when I wrote the article, actually R.C. Buford at that Sloan conference had said we looked at us and the Celtics, and so I compared the Celtics numbers and the Spurs numbers from the season before, and is basically they're both really good at two of the four factors. Uh-huh. But the Celtics were really good at the right two, and uh-huh. The Spurs were really good at the other two. Like they were good at rebounding and opponent free throw rate,
mm-hmm.
Whereas the Celtics were really good at forcing turnovers and, you know, contesting shots. And so, you know, they realized, and the Celtics were a much better defense than the Spurs. And so the Spurs came and realized, okay, we need to, you know, be better at, you know, effective field goal percentage defense than we are at rebounding. So I think that was the sort of crux of the article that I wrote, and that was sort of, but Popovich won't ever say anything that specific.
Yeah, about that or anything else. So your writing is somewhat unique in that you are sprinkling in, you know, analytics, but you also you know, you also do reporting and you're following games and things like that. So is there a are you cognizant of balancing those different elements of like, I want to have some, you know, if I'm covering a game, I want to have some stats. I want to have some sort of direct quotes from, you know, from people involved. I want to maybe have some video elements, and then I want to maybe sort of talk about some basketball things that maybe aren't directly related to the analytics.
Yeah, I mean, the only times I'm really writing about a specific game is in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
During the season, I'm just writing mostly trend stuff, and power rankings obviously is the one thing I do that actually takes up a lot of time. it's not just working the day before, you know, it takes up a lot of time the day before, but there's also a lot of work that goes into it during the week as far as taking notes after every game or, mm-hmm. you know, after every day and stuff like that. But as far as covering games, the only time I really write about a specific game is in the playoffs. And at that point, you know, you're writing, you know, you've got, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours to write after the game is over. I do chart possessions during those games. So I'm doing a possession by possession notes, and basically I have this shorthand sort of for what happens on uh-huh. a possession. So it might be, you know, and basically it's just actions. Like I'll have a note, or I'll say, you know, there's a pick and roll, and then that led to a drive, and then a pass, or whatever, and then another pick and roll, or, you know, a guy curled and then hit a cutter or something like that, basically. And then I'll put, you know, and then I'll indicate, it's in an Excel spreadsheet, and I'll indicate, you know, how many points they scored on that possession. I'll indicate if there's a turnover, or, and if it was a live ball turnover, I sort of keep track of those too, because they're different than dead ball turnovers.
Yeah.
And so I have, at the end of the game, I have numbers as far as how many points they scored per possession. I have an easy to, from in my mind, an easy to read thing as far as when they had a scoring flurry, because I could just look down the scoring column. Okay, they scored 8 times out of 9 possessions in this stretch in the third quarter. You know, so I can see that as a key sequence. And basically, I'm when I'm writing that, so I'm not trying to write a recap. I'm trying to focus on something specific.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll put some general facts as far as score and whatever. You know, leading scorers and stuff like that. But you're just weaving that into a story that's basically focused on one aspect of the game. And so I use that spreadsheet basically to figure out what was a key sequence in the game, or what was a key factor, whether it was, and in the notes I can see, oh, they, you know, they, LeBron posted up, you know, 3 times in this, you know, 6 possession sequence or whatever, and that, you know, created, you know, whatever points. And obviously it's great now where you can watch video basically a half an hour after the game is over and look it back at stuff. So basically, yeah, I approach that with an analytical mind, both with as far as numbers and X's and O's, and that's basically how I, you know, focus both my questions for coaches and players, and also, you know, what I'm writing. And sometimes if I don't get the quote I need, then I don't worry about it. You know, I feel like I can write without a quote in that situation, or without quotes. I mean, I don't think I usually have one or two that work, but sometimes it's, you just write what you write and don't worry about the and if the quotes fit, they do. If they don't, they don't.
So how long have you been doing that manual charting, and how long did it take yourself to sort of get that and have it be functional? Because I've tried that on a couple occasions, and it's like a huge flaming disaster. I'm 4 possessions in, and I've already missed half of what's happened, and I haven't seen like anything, and I feel like I can't concentrate on both things at the same time.
I've been doing it. I used to do it in a notebook, just writing it. Uh-huh. Basically on paper. Wow. Yeah, they used to hand out games. They used to hand out play-by-play sheets. I don't know if any team does that anymore. So I used to do it on paper. In fact, when I covered the 2008 Olympics, I have a whole notebook from the 2008
wow.
Olympics of play-by-play notes. But I think I started doing it in Excel probably not 3 or 4 years ago. And it's been, I've sort of refined it. I refine it year by year. I don't think I've touched it much in the last year or so. But yeah, I've developed a pretty good system. There's sometimes where if I'm watching on TV,
mm-hmm.
sometimes I do that in the regular season you know, okay, I'm going to just watch this specific game, especially Thursday night games, you know,
yeah.
if it's a big game or whatever, I'll pull out the Excel sheet for that, and it's easy because you can use the TiVo and rewind and go back. Sometimes when I'm in a live game, I may have missed something, and I'll just put a question mark. But I'll know how many points. Yeah, I'll put how many points they scored on that possession.
Yeah.
That column fills out fine. But as far as the details of the possession and the actions that were run on that possession, it might be a question mark or whatever. It's tough, but I feel like, and sometimes it's you might miss something, like especially I see a shot go up, I might look down a little bit knowing it's either going in or the defense is probably going to get the rebound. And so I might miss an offensive rebound. I might miss an outlet pass getting intercepted or something like that. That's the one I feel like I always miss, is a turnover in the backcourt, because it's sort of – You see the guy get the rebound, and you look down, and then all of a sudden the other team's got the ball again, and they're shooting a layup. That's the one thing I miss a lot, but it's a pretty good system, and it helps me go back definitely as far as seeing, they ran a lot of, the Mavs ran a lot of Monte Dirk pick and pops in that first quarter, and that produced a lot of points or whatever. They posted the Heat posted LeBron 10 times in the first quarter. I don't think they've ever done that, but you get the idea.
Yeah,
like that's I basically have the guy's initials, but LeBron, it's always just been L. So I'll put L post.
Yeah,
and I'll put the defender L post NB for Nicholas Batum or so whatever, and then I'll put little arrows for each pass that comes out of it, or I'll indicate, or I'll have shorthand for a double team, or stuff like that, and it helps look back and figure out. I don't have the play calls or anything like that, but I have the actions that lead to scores or turnovers or no scores or whatever.
So knowing that it was curiosity that sort of tugged you into analytics, and you're in this place now where most of what you do with analytics is used as sort of as a narrative tool or a descriptive tool to sort of add context to what your eyes see, do you still find yourself with curiosity about analytics things that, predictive analytics or evaluative analytics, do you find yourself, wanting to learn more about, plus minus models and those sorts of things, or are you sort of comfortable now that you've got this new sort of refined tool set that gives you a lot more context for watching basketball, which is sort of what you were interested in the beginning?
No, I mean, I feel like I have a long way to go as far, especially predictive stuff. I have no way, like, something that Kevin Pelton does or something like that, where he has his projection system,
mm-hmm.
and where he can plug in a player into a team and figure out how that. I have no idea how to do that. Like that's something way out, and it's something I'd love to do. Like mm-hmm. one thing I want to do at some point is develop a playoff prediction type of system. Based on previous years and how a team does as far as efficiency, offensive and defensive efficiency, and how that affects playoff results and stuff like that. That's one thing I'd love to do at some point, but that's something that's I have no idea how to go about. I have to work on it with my brother, who's an economics professor, so he's going to help me with that at some point.
There you go.
I am comfortable with what I have. Like I'm comfortable that if you give me something, I can figure out a way to write about it, but right now I'm just more in trying to tell stories and analyze. For me, the big thing is what wins and loses games,
mm-hmm.
and that's basically how I approach everything. Is if I'm looking at a particular team, I want to know why they're winning, why they're losing, and basically that, or a particular player, how he helps his team win, or how he mm-hmm. affects how he affects his team's numbers more than anything. And so Yeah, I'm comfortable with all the different tools I have, and the sport view stuff is I'm getting more comfortable with that. And you know, I found some just in the last week I found some cool tools, cool ways to use that to evaluate certain things and learn about certain players and and tell stories, I guess.
Yeah.
I think that's the ultimate goal.
So yeah, that's where I was headed next with the SportView data, you know, which was sort of this this big gift that sort of arrived right before the season started. And I imagine it's nice because the sort of at face value, a lot of the SportView stuff sort of really lends itself to descriptive things and narrative things. I'm wondering what it was like sort of having that all of a sudden, having that wealth of data available this year.
It was, I wish I used it more looking back. I was not that comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one, just because it was new, and two, early on, you know, you're dealing with small samples and,
yeah,
you know, it's, last year was the first year that they had a full season of it. I had some access to it the year before, and it was just limited data. So you didn't, even early on in the season and even midway through the season, you didn't want to try to read into too much. You know, you wanted to look at it and found it interesting and say, okay, maybe this is something we can do in the future, but you didn't necessarily want to draw too many conclusions from any of the data during the season. So, and then once the summer came, I was sort of basically covering USA Basketball and the World Cup when I wasn't on vacation. So it's only been in the last week, basically, that I've dove into it more and found some stuff that could be pretty cool. In telling stories also could be used as sort of scouting report type stuff on the team level.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's interesting. I definitely used it a little bit towards the end of the season. Not only stuff that was on .com, but stuff that other stuff that I had access to. Got to use it in the postseason a little bit with the finals and help look at the Spurs offense especially. So I think this year is only going to get better as far as being able to just having more data to use, and,
mm-hmm.
and I know they're always you know, coming up with new algorithms to sort of add to what we can read out of it,
mm-hmm.
I guess. Like, for an example, the pick and roll stuff, we sort of touched on that at one point last year. Basically, they're able to determine, you know, who's how many, you know, every time a team or a pair of players runs a pick and roll and who's defending it and all that stuff, and they have this stuff. I think Zach wrote about it at some point, where it's or in his Corver article, where it's like the gravity factor,
mm-hmm.
and stuff like that. I think that's something that will be added. That will be that'll be there this year.
That'll be on the public side for people, or that'll be
I don't
in this,
know. I don't
this,
know about that.
Yeah,
I don't know about that. I know on the public site, as far as I've talked to our developers a little bit. I know with the public site, the one upgrade that will come eventually is splits on the SportView stuff.
Okay.
You know how we have splits on
yeah.
the regular stat NBA.com/stats, but there wasn't splits available really on the SportView stuff. So I think that will eventually be available. But yeah, I think now, you know, having one full season of every team, you know, basically every game available, that now makes it easier to work with this year, because you can fall back and maybe you're writing about something, you see something in the game and you can look at, you know, it may be only November 15th or something like that, and you only got half a or 2 weeks of data for this season, but you can still look back at last year,
mm-hmm.
and use that to help you figure out what's going on, or figure out if a player does if what you saw is real and can be backed up by the data.
Was there anything in the SportView data last year that you were sort of intrigued by, but something that maybe didn't have as much value until we had, you know, potentially 2 years of data on? You know, is there anything you're really curious about? Like, wow, I can't wait to see what happens with these numbers when we, you know, when we sort of get to see them over time.
The pick and roll stuff was interesting. You know, that stuff wasn't available publicly, but it was something that they sort of sent me. I forget when it was. It was late in the year, maybe March. And it was basically, you know, every pick and roll that they, you know, that they had.
Mm-hmm.
When you break it down, when you're looking at, you know, individual players, then you're not going to get much of a data a sample set. But the article that I wrote out of it, I didn't want to draw too many conclusions, but there was one thing that just stood out, and that was with Portland and how there was this huge discrepancy in how well they defended the pick and roll. If Robin Lopez was the big defender on the pick and roll, they defended it really well. If LaMarcus Aldridge was the big defender, they defended it poorly.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a huge discrepancy, and you didn't see that kind of discrepancy in any sort of in any pairs of big men around the league. And so it was really interesting. I didn't want to draw this, you know, damning conclusion on about LaMarcus Aldridge, and I even reached out to the Blazers and talked to a couple people, like, what do you make of this? And and basically, because they defend the pick and roll basically the same, no matter who it was, like, they basically Aldridge defends the pick and roll the same as Lopez, as far as dropping back and sagging off the ball handler. And, you know, the Blazers had their own numbers, and they didn't have quite the same discrepancy. But I looked at, you know, I took that and then looked at a bunch of film and tried to write something about it. So I think that, the pick and roll stuff, as we continue to look at that, I think that'll be something that I'll continue to be curious about.
Go ahead.
Yeah, there was one thing that I came up with this past week where I was just looking at drives and how often a player passes when he drives, and I think that's something that could be cool for a sort of a scouting report type thing where basically I didn't have passes, but we had drives and how many times they shot out of that that player took a shot when he drove and how often he drew a foul. And so just from those two numbers, it was able to sort of figure out who's more likely to pass when they drive and who's least likely to pass when he drives. And basically, you know, Rodney Stuckey was at one extreme as far as not passing, and Steve Blake was at another extreme as far as passing. So it's basically, you can use that to say, you know, if you're a help defender in that case, if Blake is driving, you want to stay at home because he's looking to pass and he's looking to find a shooter or find a roll man or whatever. Whereas Stuckey, you can be a little bit more aggressive with your help because he's looking to score out of a drive. And so you can sort of look at the, you know, the top 15 on one end and the top 15 and the bottom 15 on the other end and sort of realize that these guys are guys that drive to score and these are guys that drive to pass. And it's definitely a cool little thing that you can get out of this data.
Yeah, there's a lot of really neat little descriptive hooks in there. I had this idea this summer that I thought was brilliant and was going to come together beautifully. Looking at the drives, and the idea was that, you know, on the player level, there's no correlation between drives and three-point shooting because, you know, players are all over and have all different skill sets. But then I had this idea that, oh, at the team level, you know, teams that drive more would also end up with more three-point shots. And it didn't work out that way at all. But I have hope that maybe 2 or 3 years down the road there's some sort of trend that emerges there. But yeah, we'll see. So I wanted to talk to you too just about a couple specific things that you had written. One of them was, and we mentioned this just briefly before, about using some of the sport view stuff, sort of breaking down game by game when you got to the finals. And there was, it seemed like the passing statistics that were available in sport view were able to sort of illuminate statistically this side of the Spurs and this ball movement thing that you know, we had always sort of seen subjectively but had never been able to see objectively.
Yeah, obviously when you're looking at passes per possession, I think that's obviously a better way to evaluate ball movement than just assists, assist to field goal ratio, mm-hmm. Which is basically all we had in the past. And so obviously the Spurs are near the top of the league in passes per possession, and secondary assists is another part of that. The one cool thing that came out of the finals was that you sort of sensed it. I even remember talking about it before the 2013 finals, was that the Spurs have the offense that can really take advantage of the Heat defense and their aggressive pick and roll coverage, where the Spurs are pick and roll and pass, and with weak side shooting, like there's you know, they're the sort of epitome of that kind of style. And you know, obviously they didn't win the finals last year, but this year they basically tore the Heat defense apart.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that came out of the finals is that their highest pass per possession numbers were against the Heat. In fact, their three after game four, I guess I was looking through box score by box score to get these numbers, looking at their passes and using my own possession numbers, but I realized, wow, these are really high numbers in game three and game four were really high numbers. And so I went to the guys at SportView, and they sort of ran their game by game numbers, and we figured out that their three highest pass per possession numbers were all against the Heat and all in Miami, the regular season game and then game three and game four. Which was pretty amazing, because it's not just the Spurs offense, but it's also the Spurs offense against the Heat defense, which sort of promotes even more passing just because of the way the Heat defend.
And then they certainly rose to the occasion there, you know, it was the combination of all those factors. You also wrote a thing at the beginning of August when the Cavaliers started making moves, just using some sport view numbers to sort of wrap some context around what that roster is going to look like this year. Anything in there you're excited about or maybe worried about from a Cleveland perspective?
I may be the person that's most excited to see Dion Waiters this year, I think. Just because...
You and Dion Waiters.
Yes, I just looked into the numbers and realized, you know, he was a really pretty he's a pretty good catch and shoot three-point shooter. When you look at his overall three-point numbers, it's okay. But he was just really bad at pull-up threes and really good at catch and shoot threes. So I think he's a guy who wants the ball in his hands, but he could be a really good off-the-ball player. And, you know, I sort of mentioned to he was at USA basketball camp as part of the select team. So I sort of mentioned it to him, and he's like, oh, you know, he was sort of interested in that. And I mentioned it to David Blatt, and he's like, yeah, I know. Like he already knew that he knew those numbers already. And then the opposite is Kyrie Irving, who's like one of the few players in the league that was a better shooter off the dribble than off the pass. You know, in general, the league is, you know, shoots better, you know, catch and shoot than they do on pull-ups. But Irving is one of those guys that's much better as a pull-up shooter. So I think it's just going to be interesting to see how he figures out how to play off the ball and whether he is ever comfortable doing that. You know, Dwayne Wade obviously had to make an adjustment when LeBron came to Miami, and he made the adjustment by being a really good cutter to the basket. I mean, he's still, you know, an awful three-point shooter. He's one of the worst three-point shooters in NBA history. But he made the adjustment by, you know, being a really good off-the-ball cutter. Irving, I don't know like what's going to happen with him. I mean, we saw him play ridiculously well at the World Cup, but that was basically with the ball in his hands. And so with LeBron, it's going to be interesting what happens. And the funny thing is that LeBron, you know, by the SportView numbers, was the second best catch and shoot 3-point shooter in the league last year behind Kyle Korver. I mean, he only had 121 catch and shoot 3-point attempts, but he shot them at 49%, which is, you know, kind of ridiculous when you think about it. It'll be interesting to see how their offense works. But I think Waiters could be, you know, a really good complementary player with that team. Just looking at his sort of catch and shoot numbers from last year, I think he should be that guy that LeBron is looking for when he's driving.
And then on the flip side, the SportView numbers did not imply a defensive juggernaut in the making. Is that fair to say?
I guess I'm trying to recall how.
There was a few things in the article about rim defense. Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, Kevin Love. You know, the Wolves were basically pretty awful at protecting the rim last year. Both Love and Pekovic were near the bottom in the defensive impact numbers that we have on the site. So yeah, that's going to be an issue, and I don't think Varejao defends the rim either. He's you know, we don't have as much data for him. So I think, yeah, that's obviously the question. But I think you can have a good defense without, elite rim protection. But it's gonna be the Heat had great top 10 defense without elite rim protection. So that's obviously the end of the floor that's gonna really determine if they're a very good team or an elite team.
Yeah. Well, John, we won't take up any more of your time. I really appreciate you, carving out this hour to talk with us. It was really interesting.
Cool, man. Ian, anytime.
All right. Thanks a lot, John. We'll be reading you on NBA.com this year, and people can follow John on Twitter as well. We'll put up with the podcast. We'll put up his Twitter account and links to a couple of the different articles we talked about. All right. Thanks a lot, John.